So today I want to talk about an upcoming report Ciel's got titled Why Nitrogen Matters in Livestock Production. And I'm joined today by my colleague, Dr. Annie Williams, who has a PhD in animal nutrition. This report is one of the series of thought leadership reports that Ciel produces to help inform debate in industry. And we want to think about why nitrogen is important. So, Annie, what do you think is the main reason we need this report?
I think across the industry and within Ciel as well, we've been quite focused on carbon and reaching net zero and everything like that. And now there's a change in focus that, yes, carbon's still important, but we need to start considering other important nutrients, how they cycle in the environment, how they impact animal production. And one of those that we need to start to consider is nitrogen.
I know the nitrous oxide is part of that carbon debate. It's a potent greenhouse gas, more potent than methane even. So nitrogen is definitely involved in that debate, but you're saying there's more to it than that.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, we're starting to see, obviously, greenhouse gases and emissions are important, but we're also starting to see debate more widely about the environment. And one of the nutrients involved in that debate is nitrogen, things like nitrogen leaching out of soils into watercourses. And as Ciel, we can consider nitrogen cycling in livestock production and how that affects the environment more widely, including that emissions debate, but not excluding everything else.
Yes, so we've got a report here, which the body of the work was written by scientists from SAUC in Scotland, and it's to provide this evidence of why nitrogen matters. There's much focus on the negative side. What's the positive side about nitrogen, where it actually delivers value to us?
We know that nitrogen is a nutrient that is absolutely required by animals and by plants. So, yeah, we can't just think of it as a totally negative thing. It's only a negative thing if we get nitrogen in the wrong place or the wrong environment, or we get excessive excretion of nitrogen. Essentially, for in our thoughts in livestock production, we need nitrogen. It makes animals grow. We need it for milk yield. We need it for live weight gain in production animals. So yeah, I think it's really important that we think of it as a cycle and look at where nitrogen is in that cycle and the positive and negative effects associated with that.
So my understanding is that nitrogen can be captured by some organisms but not others. So I think animals are dependent on getting it in their diet. Where's the cycle start, as it were?
So in terms of animals, yes, they would be dependent on it in their diet, and we'd refer to that as what we call essential amino acids. So they're the amino acids that the animal needs to grow. A part of that amino acid is nitrogen, and they are getting that nitrogen from their diet. We can talk about slight differences, obviously, between monogastrics and ruminants. Monogastrics, we have to feed them those amino acids, whereas in ruminants, because of the microbiome in the rumen, they're able to synthesize some amino acids, which gives them that slight advantage. But in terms of where it's coming from, it all goes back to talking about that cycle. And plants growing, they contain nitrogen. That nitrogen has come from the soil. The animal then consumes those plants in their diet. Animals then excrete nitrogen. That goes back, and we can include humans in that kind of circle and cycle. And we get this cycling between animals, plants, soil, water, and the atmosphere that gives us, hopefully, a nitrogen balance. And I guess some of the things that have been talked about in recent years in relation to the environment is whether we're getting that nitrogen balance within that cycle right, or whether we've got nitrogen in the wrong places.
It's an interesting point. Now, we know that nitrogen stimulates plant growth, and some commentators are suggesting that striving for ever greater productivity, we've been putting on nitrogen to stimulate the plant growth, and that then gives us those feed products for animals. But What happens when we have too much nitrogen fertilizer?
So if we get too much nitrogen fertilizer, or probably that's a bit too broad brush, if we get it applied in the wrong places or on the wrong soil types, different pHs, different weather conditions, that sort of thing, they can all affect it. We essentially get nitrogen emissions. And those nitrogen emissions could be nitrous oxide that you've already mentioned. They can be ammonia. We can get leaching of nitrates out of soil. So they're what tends to make the headlines is in the leaching of nitrates out of soil into watercourses, all sort of excessive nitrogen in a place that results in emissions.
And it's not just artificial fertilizers. You can get some of those emissions from manure or the method you use for applying them to fields if that's not done right. So you make the point there, it's about doing it the right way for the situation that you've got.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's probably where a lot of the focus is coming at the moment, on actual methods of application and how we can reduce the emissions, whether we're applying manure, whether we're applying an artificial fertilizer. How do we get it right in the actual application to reduce those emissions?
But presumably you can do things as a nutritionist that mean there's less nitrogen getting into those manures. And by manures, I mean the feces and the urine together. So what can you do as a nutritionist that minimise the nitrogen that the animal loses?
Absolutely. Well, I'm obviously a little bit ruminant biased, but in general, across nutrition, we can formulate more specifically for animal requirement. So the closer we are to animal requirement in our formulation, the less they will excrete. So in ruminants, we'd be looking at obviously crude protein values in diets, but we're also starting to move towards looking at amino acids. Actually, what are the amino acids that are required by the ruminant? How can we balance the ration to meet those amino acid requirements? But also things like considering, and this is really old, we've been doing this for absolutely years, looking at energy to protein balances and making sure that we're supplying enough energy in the diet for the animal to utilize the protein that we're giving it, allow that microbial crude protein process, it's hard to say, to take place. So looking at diet formulation as a whole and being really specific about how we're rationing animals to try and avoid those excesses that lead to more nitrogen excretion, then leads to more nitrogen manure and then can potentially give us problems further down the line.
So basically it's a case of knowing your animal, but I've heard of situations where if you think you're, say you're feeding your pigs, if you think they need a certain amount of protein, you feed a bit extra just in case you've underestimated that. But are you saying that that's going to actually run the risk of leading to more nitrogen being excreted?
Absolutely. I think we've always done that across nutrients. We've always said, well, we think that this is what they require, but not every animal within that group is going to be exactly the same. And therefore, we should supply a little bit extra because we don't want to restrict their growth or we don't want to restrict their milk yield, whatever animal we're dealing with. So we've always slightly overformulated for where we think they should be. But software's getting cleverer. We're starting to measure and manage animals more as individuals on some farms. So I think we'll see these nuances. And like I see, we're starting to see rationing, including individual amino acids. So we're starting to see these sort of nuances develop and we're getting closer and closer to actually matching the animal's requirement rather than providing things in excess.
I want to circle back to the idea you talk about amino acids, and my simple understanding of that is that amino acids are the building blocks for protein. Now, you've made reference to ruminants being a bit different. So poultry, pigs and humans, we're similar to poultry and pigs in terms of our digestive system. We have some amino acids which we can't make ourselves, and you're saying those are what's called essential amino acids that we have to get from our diet. How do ruminants do things differently in this space?
So ruminants are able to synthesize some amino acids, but with the diet that we give them. So if we provide nitrogen in the diet of a ruminant, that nitrogen plus all the other things that enter the diet, so primarily those energy sources, go into the rumen. The rumen microbiome, so all the bugs in the rumen, then synthesize amino acids, which we refer to as microbial crude protein. And that synthesis of those amino acids is what ruminants can do differently to monogastrics. So that those amino acids then go through the rest of the digestive tract and can be absorbed and utilized by the rumen. So instead of having to eat them in their diet, they're able to synthesize them themselves, which is what makes them slightly different. It basically means that they can take what we would refer to as a relatively poor quality food source, so a lot of forages, and they can upscale them, basically upgrade those sources to a protein source that they can then use to grow, to produce milk, to produce beef, to produce lamb, whichever thing we're talking about.
That's very interesting, Annie. So you're talking about the fact that ruminants can synthesize these amino acids that humans, pigs and poultry can't, but it's not actually them. The point you made is it's the microbes living in their gut that can do that, and they sort of add value to the diet. Is that right?
Absolutely. So it's the fact that they have this rumen, this chamber, which is essentially a fermentation chamber, but contains microbes which work symbiotically with the ruminant. So they are synthesizing amino acids and they're taking some of the energy that the ruminant digests in order to do that process. So they're working with the ruminant to produce amino acids that are then absorbed by the animal further down its digestive tract, something that pigs and poultry can't do because they've got a true stomach like we have. They don't have that rumen microbes doing that work for them.
Well, that sounds like a complete win-win situation, but you've been talking about a low-quality diet and the microbes effectively upvalue it for the ruminant animal. What about when you feed a very high-quality diet?
So when we feed a high-quality diet, we can almost see the opposite effect. We can almost see a downgrading of the protein. So one thing that I guess I didn't mention is ruminants. Some of the protein we provide for them in their diet will go into the rumen and it will be digested there, or the microbes will sort of do their thing with it there. Some of it will bypass the rumen. So we call that bypass protein. That's digested as it kind of would be in a monogastric. There are certain nuances, but essentially that's what's happening. If we're providing ruminants with higher quality protein sources, unless we protect them, then some of that acts as bypass protein, but some of it is then available to those rumen microbes that we've talked about doing such a good job on the low value feeds. But when they have access to higher value feeds, they're also changing it. They're digesting it, they're using some of the energy from it, some of the protein from it. And in some cases, they might be downgrading it essentially to a lower value protein source for the animal.
That's almost sounds like a situation where if I want to be really efficient, I can feed animals a diet with almost no protein in it. Could I feed a zero protein diet to a ruminant if the bugs get it out of jail, as it were?
Yes, it's possible. Yeah. So as long as you're providing enough energy, and that's fermentable energy, and there is a nitrogen source, so there's nitrogen going in. That's why we see things like urea treated straws and things like that. They're providing that nitrogen along with the forage. As long as you've got both those sources, yes, you can essentially feed a protein free diet up to a certain level of performance. So once we start pushing for more performance, we can't meet the protein requirements of the animal that way. We have to start adding protein into the diet.
But a typical diet for a high producing dairy cow, say, and that's one where it's got the potential to produce a lot of milk, is that a diet where you can feed low protein, or is that the situation you're saying where you need to actually start to be getting very precise in your protein nutrition and getting a decent level into them as well?
Exactly that. Yeah, once we reach these high performing animals, we have to start looking at our microbial crude protein ratios to bypass protein ratios and the total protein going into the diet. Yeah, a really high performing animal won't be able to deliver that performance on, let's call it, a protein free diet.
Yeah. So that high producing cow doesn't need much in the way of forage or fiber at all then? You can just feed it protein and some grains, or what?
No, we have to keep their gut happy, if that's how we put it, and we have to keep the rumen microorganisms happy. They require fiber in order to do that. We need to keep the rumen at a certain pH, so that requires fiber. So yeah, all ruminants in that situation still require some fiber. It's just the level might change depending on the level of production.
So protein is very important. Understanding how the rumen works is very important. And there's a number of balls you've got in the air if you're a ruminant nutritionist.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. I think the most important thing is to think of it, and it all comes back to the same thing with nitrogen, where the ruminant cycles nitrogen as well as thinking of our cycle of plant, animal, soil, water, environment. We've also got an individual cycle happening within the ruminant. So they are going to, some of the urea that's produced, some of that will cycle back into the rumen. Some of it's excreted, but we've got, yeah, that whole thing happening as well. So yeah, it's complicated.
So further down the digestive tract, some urea is produced, or it's in the bloodstream, and rather than just going out to the kidneys and being excreted as urine, you're saying some of it can come back and be used. So that's another way the sort of the ruminants got an advantage.
Absolutely. Yeah. So some of that urea that is produced as essentially a waste product of those amino acids that are produced will be excreted. Some of it cycles back either via saliva or straight into the rumen to act as the urea source, that source of nitrogen for crude protein production there.
By the microbes.
By the microbes.
Yeah. So how do we exploit the specialization of ruminants in agriculture, or are we already doing that?
I think it's something that farmers have been doing for a really long time. We understand that it is a cycle, and that farmers have been using it, for example, feeding their ruminant, taking the product that ruminant produces, and then using that manure, spreading it back onto land as part of that nitrogen cycle to make that grass grow, and then feeding it back to the ruminant. So I think we've been doing that for a really long time, and we've got a really good understanding. We're seeing further understanding develop in terms of ruminants' amino acid requirements, and that's all the way through from when they're a calf to an adult animal. We're seeing a lot of research happening there and a lot of development there. But I guess where we're starting to develop is understanding better about the cycle, where we impact on it, and how we can use different animals in different systems to our advantage to meet some of these environmental challenges that we're seeing happening.
Yeah, so it sounds like the ruminant evolution has shaped it for a particular efficiency when it comes to protein metabolism for low protein diets, but we can exploit a knowledge of that and at the same time up their protein nutrition to get good productivity, which lowers the carbon footprint of our products that we're producing from them.
Absolutely. I think that's right. I think it's using the right diets, the right approach for different systems to get the best output that we can in terms of nitrogen use.
So in the greater nitrogen cycle, there's going to be some inefficiencies. How do we sort of cope with that in an effort of trying to be efficient with use of resources for a sustainable farming system?
Yeah, I think losses are inevitable. What we have to do is try to mitigate them. And I think that first starts with our understanding. We have to understand where they might come from. On an individual farm, where are their primary losses for nitrogen? And how can we start to change that? So it could be on a dairy farm that the primary loss of nitrogen is excessive protein in the diet, which is resulting in excretion. It could be that on somebody else's farm, actually their primary loss of nitrogen is the way that they're applying manure to their land, or the way that they're applying artificial fertilizer to their land. So I think it's about everybody sort of thinking about that nitrogen cycle, how it applies to them, and then looking at where the biggest differences can be made in individual situations. So where can you make the biggest difference to avoid those nitrogen losses and effectively use nitrogen more efficiently?
Absolutely. The other thing is we have to remember about the value that's being added. So inorganic nitrogen is coming, and some of it comes from nitrogen gas or N2 out of the air, which microbes can fix. That then goes into the soil. Plants grow from that. But we see progressively value being added to the nitrogen. And that's what protein. And protein is a very critical feed component for you and I, as well as for livestock. So, yes, those emissions have an environmental impact. We must put that against on the ledger, the fact that nitrogen as protein has a high value.
100%. And we're only seeing that value increase as the human population expands and the demand for protein increases. Yeah, we're only seeing the value on that essentially nitrogen cycle, because that's what it all comes back to, increase.
So it's nitrogen's importance. It's critical because for producing protein, we know it stimulates plant growth. And then when it comes to livestock, the nutrition is really important to get right to minimize some of the losses you've just talked about and reduce the consequent some harmful effects in the environment. So thank you very much, Annie, for our report, which is titled Why Nitrogen Matters in Livestock Production, will be available on the CL website. And you can go there and find it by searching for that title. The report is called Why Nitrogen Matters in Livestock Production. And I commend the report to anyone in industry. It's not just about emissions. It's about a nitrogen cycle. It's about animals and how they fit into that cycle. And it's about the value that they can add. But at the same time, we want to maximize the efficiency by reducing losses and things. So thank you very much, Annie.
Thanks, Mark.